Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Bankroll Burners, the podcast for poker players who can't stop getting it in bad. I'm Mike.
And I'm Josh.
And we are here, as always, to bring you some poker hands that we've played in the past few weeks of No Limit Texas Hold'em. We're going to review those hands. We're going to live react to each other's play. We're going to determine that we really played these hands quite badly, and we're going to see if we can learn anything from it.
Yeah, and as always, you know, this is totally live. We haven't shared these hands with each other. We share many hands with each other that are much more obvious misplays. These ones are ones, you know, that we actually want to talk about and make sure, get a second opinion so that I can say, did I play this badly? And Mike can say, yes.
Exactly. Yeah, the hands where you can maybe justify your play to yourself, but it turns out you can't. Well, why don't we jump right in? I was back in the live poker streets. You know, I've been playing online lately, but I decided to head back to the casino for the first time in a month, or the card room, as it were. I headed over to Best Bet Jacksonville for some 2-2. And I had a pretty fun table, played a decently long session with some good folks, and got a few interesting hands. This first one was a straddled pot. The straddle was on most of the night, for 6 hours. It was pretty sweet.
Nice. So 2-2-4, or is it 2-2-5?
2-2-4, yeah. 2-2-4. Okay. And we're in this hand in the small blind, and we're going to be $265 effective with the main villain here, so pretty shallow, yeah. I would say.
And that's kind of how it is a lot here when the straddle's on, right? Because the max buy-in for this game is $300.
That's right. I will say we got pretty deep late in the night. We had several stacks that were, you know, between like 800 and 1,000 for a while, which was pretty unusual for this particular game.
That's awesome. It just means that people were kind of sticking around.
Yeah, for sure. But this was pretty early in the night, and I didn't know anything about any of the villains except I had identified one shit reg. At the table, but that was pretty much all I could.
Well, tell me, and maybe more importantly, tell our listeners, what are some signs that you look for in for a shit rag?
So this shit rag, you know, he was doing some three betting, so I knew that, like, you know, so it was clear he wasn't just three betting aces and kings, so mm-hmm. I knew he was someone who maybe studied the game a little bit, you know, perhaps a reg. Mm-hmm. But why did I know he was a shit rag? Well, this one pot went down where he lost on the, he value bet the river with top pair with his ace queen, and he got called by the second nut flush, which was queen deuce of diamonds, and so he just got called, by the way. He was not raised by queen deuce of diamonds. He just got called for his small river value sizing. And as he tossed his hand away, he grumbled, "I can't believe I raised preflop and you called with queen deuce suited."
Love it.
And I just thought, what an asshole.
Love it, love it, love it. Well, you know, it's always fun to see and, you know, kind of get to direct your anger at them a little bit internally, if not externally.
Yeah, I mean, for, you know, this, if you're in a game where someone's calling preflop raises with queen deuce suited, you don't want to complain about that. That's a good thing. That's,
yeah, you know, I remember seeing a Crush Live Poker video recently where Bart, like, kind of was responding to someone else sort of critiquing him. And this other person had said, "Oh, you know, Bart says that live games are unbeatable because of the wide ranges that people play." And Bart was like, let me get something straight. I have never said that, and I will never say that because it is blatantly untrue.
Yeah, the reason live games are so beatable is the wide ranges people play. So
yeah, exactly. Okay, well, let's hop into the hand then. It's 2-2-4. We're in the small blind, 265 effective. And how does the preflop action go?
Right. So there's two limps, and one's in like an EP limp and then a hijack limp, and then we make it $25 with my favorite hand, pocket nines, nine of clubs, nine of diamonds.
All right.
So fairly standard. I mean, my open over a straddle is normally 15, so, you know, I added five for each limp.
Yeah, I think that's totally fine. I love going. Love it. I've been really trying to go bigger recently when I isolate, so love it.
We do get called by the straddle, who is the main villain, and the hijack as well.
But not the EP?
Not the EP.
No. Whoa, wow, what a nit.
I know. I don't remember anything about the EP. The Hijack, I had seen, I guess at this point in the night, I could also see that he was a bit of a thinking player. That was not that he was good, just that he was a bit of a thinking player. And I didn't really have any reads at all.
And that's what he was thinking about you too, I think.
Absolutely, correctly, I'm sure.
Okay, so there's 80 in the pot, and there's already only about 240 behind. So it should be easy to get the money in if we want to.
If we want to. The flop comes out Queen of Diamonds, Eight of Hearts, Six of Spades.
Okay, Queen, Eight, Six, Rainbow. Looks fairly connected board. We've got a second pair kind of deal.
Yeah, and obviously I'm first to act here, facing two calls. What do you think? Do we want to bet this hand, protect our equity? Do we want to check?
I think I could really go either way here, because I think a board like this, we do want to be betting a fair amount. If it was like Queen 8 Deuce, I'd say like definitely bet, just because I think we should be betting our whole range there. And even multi-way, there's just so many misses from our opponents.
Sure.
And there's like, you know, we're just going to get called by like any one pair of hands, basically, but... I mean, here it's a little dicier, it's a lot more connected, but I still don't mind betting. You know, it'll still fold out some equity. They're just, it's going to be a little bit tricky to navigate a lot of turns, though.
Yeah, do you think it's a mistake to check?
No, definitely not. I think we're out of position to two players on a pretty connected board. I don't think it's really ever a mistake to check.
Yeah, fair enough. Okay. Yeah, I did decide to check here. I did consider betting to kind of, you know, clean up some equity maybe. I don't know. I did opt for a more passive line in this spot. I agree with you that I think either way is fine. I do think it will be hard to play turns if, you know, when we get called.
And I guess the one aspect is like pocket nines is maybe a little better of a bet candidate than like tens or jacks or something, because like we have a lot more turn cards that will at least give us some equity if we are, you know, against like a queen X type hand, which does help simplify it a little bit.
Sure, yeah, absolutely. That's a fair heuristic to use. So, because, yeah. So
like, maybe for example, if we bet flop and got called in one spot and the turn was like a rainbow seven, we have a pretty easy check call with like an open ender in a pair. But if we had like pocket jacks and we bet and got called and the turn was like a seven, we'd kind of be like, well, that didn't help, because nothing really helps.
Right, yeah. No, that's a fair point. I hadn't considered that. But, you know, evaluating like, oh, you know, what second pair sort of hands would I bet here versus not.
But I think it's I think, just check, you know, all of them at least at some frequency, just because we are out of position to do players. I have been trying to get a lot more checking in out of position, especially, you know, and it's just we can kind of, it should be easy to evaluate. I mean, it's a 2-2 game. Yeah, I say as fair. I get stacked.
Yeah, right, exactly. Oh, this should be easy. I don't really have a lot of eights. I was just thinking like, would I bet an eight? But the only eight I have is like ace eight suited. It's like, I would check that. So, okay, so we don't bet, we check, and it checks all the way around.
Okay, well, that makes me feel better. I mean, people can definitely check back queens here, especially kind of weak ones like queen 10, but probably not that much.
Yeah, I think that we would see some betting from a queen, a decent amount of betting from queens, but certainly in live poker, like, people will be more passive than they should, so.
Yep.
Yeah, so it checks all the way around, and the turn is the three of spades, so it does bring a backdoor flush draw, but otherwise is a brick.
So at this point, just for the audio-only people, we've got nine of clubs, nine of diamonds, and the board is queen of diamonds, eight of hearts, six of spades, and three of spades.
Correct.
Okay, well, now I think I like a bet.
I agree. I thought, you know, we could probably get some value from some draw-type hands. Even some eights, even some sixes, you know.
Oh yeah, pocket sevens, yeah. Pocket fives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I did decide to bet. I bet 30. I don't know. What do you think about that sizing?
I think going small makes sense because we are still multi-way, so there is kind of that multi-way pressure. There's still not that many draws on the board. Like it's I don't think we need to use really a large sizing, so I think it's okay to kind of go small here.
Would you? I mean, 30s. I guess like. It's a little in between. Like, would you maybe, I don't know, maybe it's subtle. Maybe 25 is better.
Yeah, it's like, you know, it's when the pots are, it's kind of one of those small pot things that I think we've talked about before where, yeah, it is like bigger, but if you bet like 25, that'd be a little under a third pot. So it's probably close enough.
Yeah.
And then I honestly don't mind just airing a little bit bigger, you know, just because, like, we should be best a lot of the time, and so why not get that value?
Yeah. And then something interesting happens here, which is the straddle raises to 75.
Wow.
And the hijack does fold.
The hijack folds.
He thinks for a while and folds.
Okay. That is interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a very small raise, right? We need to call 45 to win, like, 235 at this point. 255. No, 230.
Yes. You're saying if we...
Just
if
looking
we
at direct pot odds, like, we need to call 45 to win...
I mean, right now, there's one... What is it? 195 in there. And if we call, it'll be 250.
I don't think we can fold.
You don't think so?
I don't think so. I think there's a lot of draws out there. I mean, if you don't have any reads on the straddle, I would kind of expect this to be one of those situations where we probably have to check fold river a lot of the time. But, I mean, I do think, like, it's a pretty interesting thing in live poker. And one reason why I've started checking even, like, strong hands is because I've gotten, like, so many bluffs picked off because I, like, check flop and people are just like... I have, like, someone who thinks they know what they're talking about, like, try to explain to me kindly, like, oh, once you check back flop, no one's going to give you credit on the turn in the river. You know? And so I think that, like, people do kind of attack this type of, like, check flop, bet small turn play.
Hmm. So you think he might just be making a move here?
Yeah. And I do think that those types of plays will often shut down on the river once you call the raise.
Right. So they're going to, if they bet... If they raise and then I call and they're like, oh, he has a real hand, I'm just going to give up.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't like the situation. I thought, you know, perhaps he's picked up spades. I also, the one thing though, as I thought about it, I was like, I don't really know that he would play like a set this way unless it's specifically pocket threes. It doesn't really make that much sense for a set.
No, I feel like a set should have been betting the flop.
Right.
Except for exactly pocket threes. Yeah. Unless he's got some weird, like, maybe he's got some whacked straddle special two pair. You know, like 6-3 suited.
Yeah.
Which is really, or queen three suited, maybe. Mm-hmm. I mean, I hear people are calling with queen deuce in this game, so.
Yeah, right. Well, it wasn't the same player, but, yeah, I mean, certainly if I had, you know, had a read that this player was, like, ridiculously wide, you know, I would be much more inclined to call. But I didn't know anything about this player at this point in the night. So I did decide to call. I thought I was just, you know, the sizing was too small for me to really fold.
I think that's true. I mean, I think, like, this is one reason why big sizings on the turn are just so nice. Because, like, small sizings, it's like the hands that you're betting on the turn are, you know, the way we usually talk about it is, right, like, if you bet the flop and get called, the small sizing on the turn just allows, like, every hand that your opponent wanted to call the flop with to also call turn.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty happy to call here. I mean, I do think, I don't know, it's a weird, I don't know that he's doing it with a queen, and I think he might check back a queen, kind of a crappy queen a fair amount on the river, too. So I just think we're going to get to see sort of realize our equity a lot.
Okay, that's fair. Just thinking, like, you know, he's going to check back a lot. Yeah, I don't think he would do it with a queen, to be clear, because any queen that's strong enough to do this with is almost certainly going to bet the flop. So I kind of did not include a queen in his range. So.
And I wouldn't completely discount it. Like, the live players do kind of do that. Things like, oh, you know, it's like a raise to see where he's at, because he's you know.
Okay, fair enough.
So, okay, I think I'm on board so far.
All right, so we call. I wonder if he should have jammed. If he jams, is it too big?
I don't think so, because there's like 2/3 pot left, basically.
Yeah, I kind of wonder if, like, if he was going to raise me, if he should have just ripped it right in. Like,
probably.
Yeah. Anyway, I probably have to fold if he does that.
I think so, because we do have enough, like, because we should be checking some queen X and probably some, like, very strong hands as well.
Yeah.
On the flop, and then taking this line that are just snap calls on the turn.
Yeah, absolutely. So, the river is very interesting. It's the 10 of clubs.
Okay.
Which completes jack 9 and 9-7. So it brings in, I think, the most obvious draws, but it does brick the flush draw.
Right.
So I think this is a pretty, like, dynamic card. I don't know. It might be, like, other than, like, the Ten of Spades, I think it's probably the most dynamic card.
But yeah, it's definitely dynamic. I mean, I don't really know how much 7-9 or Jack-9 either of you really have, like, as played.
I think I could have both in some level. I also think he could have.
You think you can bet call Jack-9 on the turn?
If it's Jack-9 of spades.
I guess Jack-9 of spades, yeah. So yeah. You may have like
I probably don't have Jack-9, but 7-9 certainly. Yeah. I think I could have. I think he can have both.
He can definitely have both.
But
obviously we have 2-9s also.
Yeah, well that's the thing. We have 2-9s. So
but we do not have the 9 of spades, it's worth noting. So a lot of the combos that he might be doing this with probably weighted towards the spade variety.
There's probably no merit to leading here. There's nothing worse to get called by, so I definitely check.
No, it would just be like trying to turn our nines into a bluff because we block the sort of two straights, and that might be getting a little deep. But it's not like the worst idea ever. Like we do have, it's kind of interesting.
To try to fold out a queen, I just don't think he has that many queens.
Right, and I don't even know that they're gonna fold when the spade draw breaks.
Yeah, so we check, and villain does jam.
Okay.
My initial reaction was, well, I guess I have to fold.
Yeah, I think so.
But I thought about it some more.
Okay.
And here's what I was thinking. I was thinking, well, you know, he can have the straights, but I block them very heavily. And he probably doesn't have a set. As we established earlier, he very likely is betting a set on the flop. And that's specifically a set of threes.
Sure.
I unblocked spades.
Right.
And you don't seem very convinced so far.
Well, I'm not really, because I mean I think one aspect is like basic, like yes, we unblock spades, but I think most of the 9x of spade combos that villain has are either beating us or aren't bluffing. Like I don't really see 9-8 of spades bluffing. Taking this line, 7-9 of spades and Jack-9 of spades have gotten there. 10-9 of spades, Queen-9 of spades are beating us.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't, you know, there are not. There's I don't like think
Ace-9 of spades.
Yeah, sure. If he has Ace-9 or King-9 of spades, then yes, those are some bluffs. But actually, like not having the 9 of spades almost like blocks just as much value as it does bluffs.
Interesting.
And also, yeah. I don't know. I don't know that like the straight is that relevant. Like, I do think that villain probably would take, like, two pair as a jam.
I don't see a lot of live players jamming two pair when the most obvious draws get there.
But it's not, like the spade draw didn't get there, so I don't...
But I think the straight draws are probably more obvious because they were there on the flop. I don't know.
I don't know. I don't think that, like, because you were the preflop raiser, like, I don't really think you have 7-9 a lot. If ever.
Yeah, that's fair. I don't have 7-9 or Jack-9 very much. That's true.
So I just kind of don't think that he should really give you credit for those hands. Now, you're absolutely right that him being that like live players, fair enough, you know, might not think to that level and instead kind of see, oh, draw completes. I'm going to check back my like very strong hand.
And that's what I was thinking about was like how a live player perceives it. Obviously, like if I'm in his shoes and I'm sitting there somehow with like Queen-6, I'm absolutely ripping it.
Right.
But I don't think most live players are on that card. I also started to think, like, what would I rather call with here as played? And I don't really know. Like, I definitely would rather have nines than a queen.
Well, what about, like, queen jack?
Like why queen jack? But why? Because we block jack nine? But
yeah, and we also just have, like, a strong hand. Like, I mean, you block queen all nine, his queen, all his like two pair kind of deal.
I think queen nine in nine pocket nines are pretty close.
Yeah, I guess. Like, I don't know.
Pocket nines is better than like ace queen.
Maybe. I guess if we never think he's taking a queen this way.
I think he's never taking a queen this way. Don't you think that that's fair that he's never taking a queen this way? Like, just a naked queen jamming this on the river?
Probably, unless he has, like, ace queen himself, which is...
Unless he's, like, a learned player, I suppose. But I just never see this in live poker.
Right.
So, I don't know. I didn't really think he ever had a queen, so I figured I'd rather have nines than a queen.
Okay, yeah. I mean, I'm not totally convinced, just because I don't think that, like, 7-9 and Jack-9 are, like, that relevant is the thing. Like, I feel like he's more likely to show up here with, like, a 2-pair or a pocket 3s type hand than he is to show up with, like, 7-9 or Jack-9.
True.
Especially, and, like, most of those hands might be... I guess the flop did check around, so maybe... Yeah, I mean, it's probably close.
I don't think he has that much 2-pair, because unless it's like literally like 6-3 or queen 3, because I think he is going to bet like queen 8 or queen 6 or 8-6 on the flop.
Right.
So I just didn't see that much value for him to have, and I blocked already some of it. Like, I think like the value is literally like queen 3 and 6-3 if he even plays those hands.
Right.
And then what? Like, what is the other value? I don't know.
Right.
What else does he logically have for value?
Like Jack-9, which we do block, but not, you know, not the spade variety. So okay. I mean, I guess I could get on board with a call. It is. I see your point that it is definitely better than like pocket kings.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, look, it's very possible against the live population. Like, we're getting like 2.5 to 1. Like, are we good here? 30% of the time versus the live population.
Yeah, probably. It's also just weird though, because like we could lose to bluffs theoretically, like possibly. Like he could just have like a random spaz with like a 10 that he does. Like 10x of spades might just play this way to get you off a queen.
That would be pretty sick.
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting.
But okay, well, it sounds to me like you put in the call.
I did put in the call. It seems to me like you're not very convinced that that is the correct decision, but and perhaps not. But it was correct in this spot.
Nice.
He did show ace 5 of hearts. It's a complete airball.
Wow. Well, yeah. I mean, I did say on the turn, like, people do like to attack this, like, play.
Yeah.
So clearly he just thought you were full of it. And, I mean, he was, you know, you didn't exactly have a strong hand, so kudos to you for finding the call.
Yeah, I don't know. I do get curious in these spots. It's gotten me in trouble many times, and I it's probably bad for me to ever win, because then it just makes me think it's justified.
Yeah, I feel like whenever I get curious, I get like just shown the most. I mean, a lot of the time when I get curious, I just get shown like the most stupid nuts in the world, you know?
Yeah, I hear you. I just thought it was like there's no nuts to be had here besides the 9x straights, which I block. So I feel like if I'm going to call with anything, it's got to be pocket nines. I don't know.
Right. But no, I think that's fair.
Yeah, so, all right, well, it seems like you're giving this hand maybe a 6 out of 10.
No, I do think it's interesting. I mean, I do see your point that it's like, we definitely do block some nuts. I'm just not totally convinced that, like, those are the nutted combos that we need to be worried about.
Yeah.
But obviously, fair. Villain is repping a super narrow range, so it's like, maybe at that point we just say, well, you know, if he's ever bluffing, then he's probably over-bluffing the spot.
Sure. Yeah, and this guy, as the night wore on, it became clear he's a pretty fun player.
Yeah.
And he did end up leaving the table to go play 2-5, which was a bummer. I like the guy.
Nice. Good. Nice hand.
Yeah, cool. So, all right. What do you got for us?
All right. So I'm playing 1-3 in this hand. We appear to be 600 effective.
All right.
Where this is a Encore Boston Harbor. And the straddle has been on intermittently here. I must say, I have had a really nice time at most of the tables I've been playing at, despite getting overall continuing to be torched, I should say. But it's been very friendly tables. Burning. You know, like a guy at one of my tables said he was inviting everyone to his next Thanksgiving.
How many beers in was he?
several. And his wife was also playing at the table.
That's funny.
And she raised no complaint. So we're $600 effective in this hand. I am in the large blind. There are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 limps to me.
Okay, and you're, by large blind, you do not mean a straddle.
I'm in the big blind.
You mean one? You're in the $3 blind.
Okay. Yeah, there's 5 limps to me. I'm in the $3 big blind. I look down at ace of spades, king of diamonds, right. And I raise to 30.
Okay. Pretty chunky, but probably fine.
Yeah, I mean, I was just like, you know, punish the limpers.
Did it
yeah,
work?
I mean, I'm sure that you experienced the same thing, that people kind of realize after not that long that, like, we are not going to be joining the limp parade. And I feel like that is kind of works to our benefit, where it's like, oh, if we're raising everything, then people just kind of get annoyed and call.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think it's really hard as, like, just, like, by being a young guy who doesn't limp, you always have just, like, an aggressive image, you know?
Which I don't mind.
Yeah, so it's, yeah, absolutely. I think people pick up on it pretty quick.
Yeah, and by the way, I mean, $30 is, like, the standard raise of 15 plus the 5 limps, so I honestly probably could have gone 35.
Oh, yeah, I mean, yeah, seems fine. So do you just get a sea of calls?
I was thinking that I very well might, as the UTG plus one player calls, and he was the second limper, and then the hijack calls, but thankfully the button and the small blind both get out of the way.
Cool, and we've got ace king off.
We've got ace of spades, king of diamonds. There's going to be basically $100 in the pot at this point. We got 570 behind, and we are going to totally and completely brick the flop. It comes 8 of clubs, 6 of diamonds, 5 of hearts.
Ooh, that's such a bad flop.
So I go ahead and check, as I would probably do with all my holdings.
Yep, I think that's reasonable. I think you should probably...
probably 100%.
From a balance standpoint, you should be checking all your holdings here. Maybe you would bet aces with plans of folding to a raise here, just exploitatively, because you're not going to get raised unless somebody has a very strong hand here.
Yep, I mean, I could. I might bet aces. I might check raise aces. Mm-hmm. Might check call aces.
I don't know that I would check raise aces. That might be an overplay.
Yeah, I guess we're too deep. So probably would just bet aces.
No.
And might bet, like, pocket fives, pocket sixes here, if I decide to raise those, which I probably do on some occasions.
Sure. Okay. So you check.
I check. And just like your hand, it checks around. Nice. Which I am quite happy to see.
You know, it's interesting. Like, you can definitely have the best hand here. Obviously, you can also be lose. You can be behind. But you're probably never that far behind when it checks around.
Yep. I agree. And the turn is now going to come kind of an interesting one. It's the queen of clubs. So the board now, 8 of clubs, 6 of diamonds, 5 of hearts, queen of clubs. We've got ace-king offsuit. We do not have a club. And what do you like here? Do you think we should just continue checking and, you know, kind of try to get to showdown?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, certainly our opponents can have no pair here. That's possible. They can both have missed. And then we have the nut no pair. So that's great. We could also be looking at a 5 or a 6, maybe. Probably nobody has an 8. I mean, someone might, but probably not. And it's just a question of, is someone going to fold a 5 or a 6? If we bet now and bet river, we can probably get a 5 or a 6 to fold. So it's a question versus, you know, we could check here with let's pants to check river and maybe win. How often is that going to happen? So I don't think it would be correct to use this particular hand as a bet give up river. So I think we'd have to decide, do we want to structure a double barrel, or are we just happy to continue taking our equity and checking?
Right. I think that's fair. I basically decided, like, this hand should probably be a bet, and especially on this turn card, just because, like, I think I'm going to have a lot of hands that want to bet this turn card for value. And, like,
sure,
this hand is, like, kind of a, I don't know, it's kind of a nice one. Like, I don't have a club, so I can even, like, get value from club draws sometimes. I feel like there are just so many, like, kind of pair plus straight draw type hands that I feel like we talk about so often on this podcast that, like, you know, our people just aren't going to start betting, but we'll call one bet and probably will fold the river if they don't improve. So, you know, I feel like I probably do need to, like, give up if, like, the river comes, like, a 7 or a
sure.
4 or a 9 or something like that, you know, something super connected. But I think on a lot of disconnected rivers, my plan would definitely be to sort of go for it and try and get people off those types of hands, especially considering this card is just so good for me.
Yeah, and I don't look, I mean, it's fine to be more aggressive than, you know, to turn more hands into bluffs than maybe you think you need to, just because it's live poker and no one's showing a bunch of strength. So go after it. You know, you're not going to get played back at much. So I'm fine with a bet here. Like, you could make the argument that there are better bluff candidates that have less showdown value, like any other ace X, but, like, the end of the day, you know, get after it. So
I mean, it's also one of these things where actually, like, weirdly, ace-king becomes a better bluff if we want to talk, like, hand composition, because, like, people are absolutely limp-calling, like, king-queen, and maybe even ace-queen.
Maybe, but I think they probably do, you know, I think they probably limp-call more, Queen Jack, Queen Ten.
That's true. Yeah, I mean, I just kind of think this card's so good for me. If someone has a queen, like, kind of soapy it, you know, like, there's just so many worse. I mean, there's so many like hands that beat me that are much worse than a queen.
Yeah, I mean, so you're saying you wouldn't do this if you had a club? It sounds like.
Yeah, probably not.
Alright. Yeah. Okay. So you bet.
I mean, it's interesting, right? Because maybe if we have a club, it like makes more sense to like bet, turn, and then give up river because we like. I don't know.
I don't like betting this hand if we're going to give up plans to give up river because I just think that it's never going to work against right. the hands we're targeting.
So yeah, then probably would not do it with a club. I hadn't really thought that far ahead.
Yeah.
Well, that far good. Sideways. I can barely think about my current hand.
Yeah, right. Okay, so if you're going to bet this board as a double barrel... And we're looking at about $100 in the pot and, you know, 570 behind. It's probably not possible to get all the money in soon after this, so I have that consideration. I would maybe look at betting a pretty... I mean, your opponents are going to be fairly bottom heavy at this point in the range, so I'd probably use a pretty small sizing.
Yeah, so I bet 35.
Fine.
It's kind of one of these, like, I mean, it's just kind of multi-way. You know, it's multi-way, nobody bet on the flop, so I'd rather kind of go small here. And I mean, I don't even know that I need to go that big on the river if it's kind of like a brick in order to get people off something, right? You almost worry that like going too big on the river doesn't really represent your hand on such like a wet board.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I like a small sizing and potentially a small river sizing. What happens?
So I bet 35. The first limper calls. That's UTG plus one, and the hijack folds. So nice that I get one person out. Because if both people call, I'm not sure that I should be blasting river.
Yeah, it starts to get old dicey. Yeah, I mean it's unfortunate. The middle position, the middle player called, which is a little bit stronger than the player closing the action calling. That being said, he can certainly have sixes and fives, pair plus straight draw type hands here, like you talked about. So I don't think it's too concerning.
And then the river is going to roll off the five of spades. So the front door club draw, bricks, the bottom card pairs. Definitely better than the six pairing, in my opinion.
Sure. Yeah, he's going to have more sixes and fives. Yeah, it's interesting. Do you think that if he has a five, do you think that he would raise if you bet?
Probably. I don't know. Maybe.
I mean, you never know with live players. Like, sometimes they won't.
It depends on the five, though, right? Like, what fives does he have? Like, is he raising with 7-5 or 5-4? Maybe not. Is he raising with ace 5 if he got really sticky with it? Probably.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I don't know. I just don't I think we can bet fold this. Anyway.
Well, we're definitely folding if we get raised, yeah.
Well, obviously. Well, I don't know. You know, against certain players, you might not. Against the general live population. Yeah, I think we can bet here.
I agree. I mean, I think the bottom card pairing doesn't really matter that much. Like, I don't really think he should have a lot of fives. Like, there aren't really any pair plus straight draw type hands that have a five. Like, maybe he's got 7-5, but there's... You have two combos of 7-5 suited, and he limped from pretty early on, so it's unlikely he has 7-5 offsuit, but possible, of course. So he would have had to kind of defend the turn with like a naked 5 in the middle. I feel like it's just more likely that he's got some other, you know, 6x, pocket 7s, 8x, something like that.
Yeah, agreed. No, I like a bet here. I don't know that it has to be... super big, maybe half pot wouldn't be the biggest I'd go.
Yeah, so I bet 100, which is a bit bigger than half pot.
Yeah, I mean, that's like a two-thirds more like.
Yeah, I mean, I think I would take this. I feel like it's okay to go a little bigger than half pot with like a good queen here.
Because I do think that okay.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think that does put like his sort of one pair hands into a pretty tough spot. You know, if you bet like 100 and it's like, well, he's gotten 8, does he really want to give you credit for a queen or not?
No, fair enough. Yeah, seems like good sizing.
Okay, does well, he doesn't think about it for too long, and he folds.
Nice, we got him.
Yeah, I don't know. I really wanted to check whether, like, ace-king was a good bluff candidate, because I felt a little weird, but I was like, you know, when I check, like, I'm checking the flop, I feel like my hand, like, I should rep this queen a lot, and then the hand felt like a pretty good sort of double-barrel candidate to me, so it sounds like you are okay with that.
I know, a lot of people say, like, oh, you shouldn't bluff ace-king for 3 streets, but you didn't, first of all, you didn't bet flop, but, I don't know. I think it's fine. I think probably it's not optimal. You know, there's probably better bluffs there, but as long as you've got some kind of heuristic you're using where you're like, well, I'm not going to do this with a club, but I am going to do it without a club, it's fine. Like, you know, it's just, and it's also, it's obviously table dependent. I mean, against some tables, you can just bluff way more than you need to. And against, you know, but if you're, so I don't really know if you had any reads on this guy, but.
I think this whole table, I kind of decided that I could just push around because people just made like, people were just folding crap to raises. Like,
I was with
you people?
If they were, if it was a foldy locks table, I would absolutely be taking this. Absolutely. Great. Seems like a good play.
Those tables are weird, though. You know, it's like people love to just like call down with random stuff in random moments.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
But, you know, that's kind of where we default back to balance or balance-ish, where it's like, well, if we need to be slightly over bluffing, but, you know, we actually do want to take, you know, find a sizing that we think we could do with both bluffs and value, because that actually means that our opponents will have to make like a difficult decision rather than just letting them continue or fold with, you know, a significant portion of their range.
Definitely. And I guess the only comment I'll make is sometimes the river goes check, check, and you win.
Yep.
So
probably rarely.
Probably with this particular setup, not very often. Like, they have to have specifically clubs. Right. And not, well,
or
but
like
I did have
10-9.
Yeah, right.
Which is like double guttered.
Yeah, so I think it's probably appropriate. I think on a board where they are, where there's more draws available, I guess, that are kind of middling rather than low cards, maybe you might consider checking to win here. Sometimes.
Right, like if Jack 10 is like an open ender, or like there's 2 flush draws or something, it might make sense to just check.
Yeah.
It is worth noting, at this table, I did win multiple pots at Showdown with King High.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that just, like, checked around, like, 3 streets in a row with, like, 4 players after I raised preflop.
So, there you go.
So I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, that's a good table. All right. I've got a hand from the same game, much later in the night. And the villain in this hand, the main villain in this hand, we're going to be about 750 effective with them.
And Straddle's still on?
Straddle is on in this hand. It was on most hands. And this villain, this was the hijack in the previous hand. At this point in the night, I could tell this guy was playing like every hand under the sun. Like, this person was playing so many hands.
Nice.
Limp so that's
call, just, limp call, raise.
Lots of limp calls, lots of just flatting.
Nice.
So yeah, definitely. So that's just something to keep in mind for this hand.
I foresee that you have to fold to a raise. All right.
So basically, so like I said, 224. So we're almost 200 BBs effective with the straddle. I'm in the cutoff with King of Spades, King of Hearts.
It's a good hand.
It is, and it actually folds to me, which is bizarre.
And I assume you limp to set the trap.
I limp to set the trap. Now, I make it 15.
Okay.
And we get all 3 blinds to call.
But and not the button?
Not the button.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
All right. Can our ace magnets...
I mean, it's probably one more than I want. You know.
Well, you know, can our ace magnets dodge the bullet?
Well, they do. It's 10 of spades, 8 of diamonds, 3 of hearts.
Sorry, say that one more time. 10 of spades, 8 of diamonds, and...
3 of hearts.
Three of hearts. So 10-8-3 rainbow, we've got pocket kings. It's looking like smooth sailing to me.
That's what I was thinking in the moment. It does check to me, and I decide to bet. I think I have to bet.
This is a great bet.
I go ahead and make it $30, about half pot. Probably supposed to size smaller in theory, but come on.
I don't know. This board's very wet. You have a lot of opponents. It's pretty likely that one of them has like a 10 or like a pair and some, you know, backdoors galore or something like that. I think that you should take a larger sizing here and just extract maximum value.
Yeah, fair enough. So probably not necessarily always betting this board, but definitely betting it with our specific hand. And the small blind calls, the big blind calls, and the straddle folds.
Got it. And which one of these fellas is the high VPIP?
It is the big blind.
Of course, VPIP voluntarily put chips in pot. He loves playing hands, is all that
means. He loves to play hands. Yeah, so we're looking at a pot of about 150 now.
We've got about 700 behind.
Yeah.
I'm totally on board with all of your decisions to this point.
Yeah, I think it's pretty straightforward up until this point. The turn is pretty interesting. It's the 10 of clubs, which is not my favorite card.
It's not, no. So it does complete the rainbow, right? We got 10 of spades, 8 of diamonds, 3 of hearts, 10 of clubs, so it's a total rainbow. But obviously the top card pairs, it's fairly likely one of these guys has got a 10 when they both call.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think if it was heads up, I can probably continue to bet. But as it stands, I'm thinking that if it checks to me, I am going to check. I don't know if you agree with that.
I think that's totally fine into multiple opponents. And obviously, yeah, if we do that, we're pretty much, like, we're going to call a bet on the river.
Yeah, well, that's what I was thinking. So it went check, check. I checked and I said, well, hey, I'm under-upping my hand a little bit here. I should be prepared to call a reasonable-sized riverbet.
So that's what happened on the turn? Is it checked around?
Mm-hmm, checked all the way around.
Nice. You know, I would be a little worried if, like, a guy, like, bet 100 here, you know?
Do you think we fold if someone just donks $100 right now?
I don't think so. I mean, I think if, like, the small blind bets 100 and big blind calls,
then
maybe we can fold. But if, like, small blind checks, big blind bets 100, it sounds like this guy's playing a ton of hands and getting after it. We probably want to call once and maybe fold river.
Yeah, but thankfully it does check all the way around. And I'm thinking, hey, you know, I'm going to call a reasonable sized bet.
I don't like how you keep saying reasonable sized bet.
Well, the river rolls off. I didn't even write it down because it was a complete brick.
Let's call it a deuce.
Instead of river bricks. So.
Okay, so the river is a total brick. So 10, 8, 3, 10, deuce, no flush draws at any point. So, okay.
The small blind checks. This is a player, the small blind, by the way, who has always bet when he's had it and has never done anything fancy. So I'm pretty confident he's got nothing at this point. The big blind, however, bets 160. So a slight overbet.
Wow.
Yeah, I was like, ugh.
Yeah?
What do we think?
I mean, I think we just suck it up and call.
You think?
Yeah.
But like, what are we beating?
Like, pocket jacks? Pocket nines?
No way they're taking this sizing.
Yeah, the absolutely. You check back turn, they're like, no, they're like, this hand is the nuts.
I don't think this guy's betting an overbet, though. I mean, this is
does this guy know what the size of the pot is?
I think so. I remember I said earlier in the first hand, this guy was something of a thinking player. Like, he was definitely playing too many hands, but he was making comments about things and being like, "Oh, I wonder if I was supposed to do X, Y, Z." So, like, clearly he's thinking about the game. He probably understands pot odds. I've seen him use different sizings in different spots.
I don't know. We're stupidly high up in our range.
I know, but
we're like disgustingly high.
This is live poker, though,
and this is basically a pot size bet. Like, I would not even call this an over bet, you know?
Okay, so yeah, right. I mean, maybe he doesn't know. Maybe he thinks it's a pot size bet. Yeah. If it's a pot, does that mean it's just a call?
I think so. I mean, I don't know. Like, what else are we? What are we calling with? Like,
maybe
I don't
nothing.
Think.
I mean, maybe nothing.
Like, I don't like that. I don't know. I think he's like getting out of line enough with some. I don't know, maybe he's got queen jack, maybe he's got jack nine and he's bluffing with it. I think that this guy could be taking like pocket nines, pocket jacks for value here once we check back the turn. I think that just, like, it's such a, I feel like that's kind of a common live thing, is, like, once you check back the turn, people just get, like, dollar signs in their eyes. You know, they're like, this pair is the nuts.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think we beat some value. I think we do beat some bluff. Like, I do think he can have some bluffs here, if he's bluffing ever.
That's the question, is, does he bluff ever? I mean, I think
he just bluffed you with ace five of hearts, didn't he?
No, that was a different guy. Different guy.
Okay.
If this was the guy with ace five of hearts, obviously I'm snapping here. This was the hijack in the first hand. So this guy, I knew he was playing a lot of hands, but I hadn't seen him bluff.
I don't know. I don't think that I could fold here. This is just like, he has, like, we're so, I don't think we can just fold 100% of our range because the top card pairs, like, you know, we've protected, like, we checked back turn, which is great, and then I think, like, we just have to, like, sigh and put it in, and we're gonna be good, like, some, like, I think some amount of the, some decent amount of the time. We only need to be good a third of the time here to win, to make this a profitable call. A little under, yeah. Little over a third.
Are we good a third of the time here?
I think so. I mean, how many tens does he have? I don't know. It's tough for me to give him.
This guy has all of the ten.
It's tough for me to just say this guy always has a ten.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, I called.
Well, I know what you're saying, but it's like, do we really just want to fold range here and assume this guy is never bluffing?
But the thing is, if he bluffs a little bit, like, this is, he has to be bluffing a third of the time.
Definitely. But this is kind of the type of, like, I don't know, this to me is the type of action that does kind of induce people to either overbluff or overvalue.
Hmm. Okay. Well, we obviously, he has the nuts. He has 10-8 offsuit.
So. And small blind folds.
Yeah. Ugh. Yeah. Well, he has the stones.
Well, I mean, yeah, that's like, that is what it is. I don't know. I'm just not sweating it. Like,
yeah.
We just have to pay him off there. I don't know.
I wonder, like, in live poker, like, are people really betting pot into multiple people with bluffs a third of the time? I don't know, man.
Yeah, it's just so tough because, like, we're probably not checking back, like, any 10x or better on the turn.
Right. No, I agree. Like, what better hand do we have to call with? I mean, there's no difference between kings and aces.
Right, absolutely.
So, I don't know. There's nothing.
Like, and there's no flush draw, there's no... Yeah.
From a defense frequency standpoint, I absolutely have to call.
Yeah, I just think there's too much, like, live spazzing that goes on here.
I don't know. I just wonder, I agree that there is live spazzing that goes on here. I just don't know if it's a third of the time. I don't know. All right. Whatever. I mean, I just was like, yep. Yeah. I mean, I wasn't, like, super upset after the hand. I was like, yeah.
Right, you know, of course. Because, like, you kind of expect, you're like, well, I feel like you have a 10, but it's like,
yeah.
What's he going to do?
Yeah, so... I don't know. I guess I have to call. Sometimes you just fold everything. Yeah. I mean, there was a player... there was a player at the table against who I'm very confident I would have folded literally any hand to a large bet from this player.
I have folded top to a single bet.
Yeah. There are players...
Absolutely.
Yeah, there are absolutely players where that is appropriate to fold 100% of the hands you get there with. So I think that... Given that, it's just a question of, like, is this that sort of situation?
Mm-hmm.
And I maybe.
Right. It's always.
It might be printing money to fold 100% of the time somebody pots the river into multiple people in 2-2.
It's always awkward because, like, it's like the type of guy who plays everything. Just, like, so often, they're like, they have to bluff some hands.
Sure.
Like, and, yeah. Like, you know, he's getting to the river with so many hands.
Yeah, you're right. And sometimes maybe he's just going for it. I didn't know if this player.
Right. And sometimes people, like, everyone gives them credit, and that means you never get to see their hands because they just, like, bomb the river every time and everyone folds. And you're like, I literally have no idea if that's because they're, like, a known nit or because, like, people just hate facing large bets, you know?
They're just a sicko. Yeah,
yeah, right. So well, I think you can't really go wrong with the call here. I don't know.
All right. Fair enough. Okay. Well, take us home.
All right. Sounds good. Very interesting hand, I must say. But, you know, Could you be wrong in folding, like, you know, to overbet to, like, a pot-sized bet multi-way? Probably not.
I feel like it might be one of those things that, like, prints money if you just always fold to a pot-sized bet.
I mean, it definitely doesn't print money, you know. EV of folding is always zero.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks, nerd.
You're welcome.
All right.
Well, speaking of folding, I don't. We're back at Encore. We're playing a 1-3 game. I think this is the same table. It might be a different table. I don't remember. But we're $400 effective in this hand. There's still no straddle on. And this is a kind of a unique hand in that it folds around to the cutoff. The cutoff is, I would say he's kind of ABC, but he looks to be somewhat thinking. I think he's like kind of learning the game, but he seems to actually be learning like good things.
Okay.
Like he's doing a fair amount of raising. He's definitely doing some limping too, but like I've noticed that he's been raising a bit. You know, interesting. Good, nice guy. He is going to limp from the cutoff, so forget everything I said, I guess.
Yeah. Immediately. Yeah. If you're limping from the cutoff, you can't be learning that hard.
No, you're right. But he did seem like, you know, maybe more raising more than others. I'm in the small blind. I've got red pocket sixes.
Okay.
And I decide to raise to 15.
That's fine.
I would say, you know, if there's like a bunch of early position limps, I'm probably just like over limping this in the small blind.
Yeah, and I wouldn't even have thought it was particularly strange if you over limped it in this spot either. I don't think it super matters, but I'm happy to raise it up here, of course.
Yeah, I mean, because it's a cutoff limp, I'm kind of like, wow, he really, really can't be that strong. So. Yeah. I decide to raise. I've got red sixes, so six of diamonds, six of hearts. The big blind folds, and the limper calls.
Okay. Nice heads-up pot.
Nice heads-up pot that, of course, I did not run through a solver.
Well, you can. He limped, so.
Ah, heck yeah. Yeah, if there's one thing we've learned is that solvers are terrible at knowing people's limping ranges.
Yeah, I mean, we are terrible at knowing people's limping ranges. Because, like, you're supposed to just tell the solver what you think the limping range is. But, of course, you know, it's hard to know.
Well,
but
the flop is going to come down a super interesting one. As we move off to the flop and stop, you know, don't think about how bad we are. There's 30, basically a little over 30 bucks in the pot. 385 behind. And the flop is going to come ace, queen, 10, all diamonds. And we've got the six of diamonds.
Well, in theory, this is a check 100.
Really?
Oh, for sure. Because when you're the aggressor, like, and the flop comes, like, all high monotone, you can, like, almost never have a flush. So you're supposed to check. That's my recollection, anyway.
Interesting.
I'm not saying, I mean, that's just the theory. But, of course, this man limp called from the cutoff. So.
No, that's interesting. I don't think I knew that. And that's... That I was kind of thinking that I actually had probably a range advantage on this board, just because
you do, but you have an extreme nut disadvantage.
Right, I mean that makes sense.
So
well, I decide to bet because I have I have a diamond. First of all, I don't know that I'm necessarily betting this board 100% of the time. I probably am not, but I do have a diamond, and I feel like my hand is a pretty good bluff candidate.
So you're just turning your hand into a bluff here. You're thinking of this as like a bluff.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's ace queen 10. I feel like there's, you know, I'm either going to get him to fold right away or it's going to be like a bluff, and I don't know if I want to. I don't know if this hand makes the best triple barrel candidate. I don't know, you know, what we want to do with this hand, but I do think once we get called once, it's highly likely that we're no good.
Well, he could just have as a naked diamond, excuse me.
That's true, but it's hard for him to have a naked diamond that isn't paired up, right? Like, he would have to have, like, king 9 offsuit, or, like, jack 9 offsuit.
Yeah, I mean, but, you know, pair plus diamond will probably fold to a triple barrel, assuming another diamond doesn't come.
Right.
Not saying that you should do that, but, I mean, you kind of, you want him to have pair plus diamond, so it's weird, like, do you want to have a diamond yourself? But of course, if you don't have a diamond yourself, it's more likely he has two diamonds, so I don't know. My knowledge of the theory here ended with what I said earlier. So.
Well, and if we wanted to try and go down that route, which, you know, I also maybe do not have the best grasp of the theory here, but of course, I have the six of diamonds. There probably aren't that many pair plus flush draws that contain the six of diamonds in my opponent's range, except some, like, ace-six offsuit. And there are a lot of, like, flushes that could have the six of diamonds, like suited connectors and like one gappers.
Yeah, so fair. So maybe this would be a good triple pro candidate. But what kind of sizing are you thinking of taking on this bet?
Well, I think I have to go small on this board, just because like I think I've read that like, you know, monotone flops, you often want to go small, big.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of the bet structuring. I don't know if that is supposed to change when I'm out of position too. Like, I don't know. I guess I'm not.
Yeah, but it makes sense. I mean, again, in theory, you're really not supposed to be betting this board that much. So like, but I think it's fine to just use a small sizing here.
Yeah, I seem to recall that like this.
He's not going to attack you with it.
I seem to recall that like these boards and like low paired boards are ones where, you know, you don't bet that much, but you still kind of use a small sizing just because you are at such like a nut disadvantage.
Sure. Okay. So you bet.
So I bet 10. Fair. To like 30-ish.
Seems reasonable. And what does he do?
He calls.
Did he call particularly quickly or I don't know anything like that?
I think maybe average speed. I don't know. I don't think I had any particular live reads.
Fair enough. That was worth asking.
The turn is going to come a total brick. It's the deuce of hearts. Okay. And I don't know. What do you think? Should we keep betting? Give up and try and get to showdown? You know, maybe another diamond comes and we win.
It's interesting because when he just calls the flop, like, sure, he could have the nuts, but he's much more weighted towards one pair type holdings or like single diamond type hands or single diamond plus pair type hands. I do think if you wanted to triple barrel this hand, I wouldn't blame you for it. I think it's probably, for the reasons you stated earlier, a fairly good candidate that you block a lot of his flushes but unblock his paired diamond offsuit diamond type holdings.
Right. What are other hands that we might want to take like this way? Like, would we want to do like Jack 10 offsuit if we're even raising that? You know, with the Jack of diamonds, would that make a better candidate? But it's almost like we want him to have the Jack of diamonds because he's got so many hands like Queen Jack and Jack 10 himself.
Right. Yeah. I kind of think that like sevens and sixes with a diamond, maybe eights with a diamond, would be your best hands to do this with.
Right. Because then I guess fives and fours, like, then we kind of run into, well, he might actually be limping those wheel aces a little more.
Yeah. Oh, well, I wasn't even thinking about that, but that's true too. But yeah, I think that I'm fine. I just think that there's more like 6-7, 7-8, 6-8 type of hands.
Oh, than maybe sure. Five, yeah, six. That's a good point.
That's kind of what I was thinking. But there's some 5-6s too. Probably not a lot of 4-5s. So
no.
I think that let's say 5-8s of diamonds. Sorry, 5-8s with a diamond is probably the best sorts of bluff hands. And then obviously for value, any flush, you know, you can take. Also any set.
Sure. I mean, probably like, I mean, I don't know, like ace king is probably a good, like, get at least 2 streets of value, maybe not 3, but
sure. Yeah, I mean,
we can definitely have a lot of value here, right?
You might be able to take ace king for 3 streets, honestly. So
yeah, two pair, like any two pair, probably ace king, like,
yeah. So, you know, you need some bluffs, so what the heck.
What kind of sizing would you use here?
Well, let's see, there's about 50 in the pot and we've got
375 behind.
370. Oh, right, it's just 400 start. Well,
so we're not going to be able to get all the money in. I don't,
unless we use an overbet sizing,
which I don't know is appropriate with like this hand.
Yeah, I'm trying to think like what would we do with a flush. Probably would not take an overbet sizing.
Yeah, so I kind of settled on like kind of a, I thought about what I would do on the flush, and I kind of settled on like a meaty sizing of like 35.
Yeah, I might have gone like 40, but yeah, it's same difference.
70, yeah, 70, I think I went 70%. I think, you know, maybe a little bigger might make sense, but I kind of thought, you know, I don't want to overbet because I think that just lets him fold a lot of hands that could otherwise continue if I were not bluffing.
Yeah.
So I may as well take a slightly smaller sizing and just, you know, go for it.
Agreed. I like it. I think this is the right sizing. Yeah.
Okay. Definitely point taken that we could go a titch bigger.
And does he call?
He calls. Okay. Fairly quickly again. But he does, he just kind of like flicks it in. He doesn't really think about like raising, that's for sure.
Right. Well, so, I mean, again, like his range is capped. We've said it before and we're always right.
Well, the thing is, we are always right. It just depends on what capped means.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, he is not necessarily super comfortable with his hand, but that doesn't mean that it's a bad hand.
Right. He can still, like, I've seen guys, we had a hand on this podcast, I don't remember the episode, where I kind of use these sorts of reads to deduce that a player was not very comfortable with their hand on a monotone flop, and I did triple barrel, and they did show up with a weak flush. So.
Right, and it's like the board paired, and you triple barreled, right? And he was just like, "Oh, I can't fold this." I'm like,
"Yeah, I think that was right." Yeah, so, what happened? So we're now looking at what, like 120 in the middle.
Yep, 120 in the middle, 340 behind, and the river rolls off the 8 of spades. So pretty big brick. I mean, Jack 9 gets there, but like, I'm not too worried about Jack 9.
Yeah, it's a hand he can have, but he's much more likely to have a Jack 10, a Queen Jack, something like that.
Yeah.
10-9.
So I think now's the time to go big.
That's kind of my thinking. Yeah, absolutely. I wouldn't go bigger than pot, but I think you could probably bet pot.
Mm-hmm. So I probably should have gone a little bigger here. I bet 100.
Well, so
it's a 120.
Yeah, 100. I mean, if you bet 120, then how much do you have behind? You have
220 behind.
So can you fold if he, like, in theory here, would you be able to fold to a jam?
So he jammed for 220 into 360. So I think so. It would be like a two-thirds pot size. Yeah.
So I think you could bet pot here.
Yeah, that's a good point, and something I should be thinking about is, you know, how much we have behind.
Yeah. So, but I mean, whatever. You bet 100.
So you're on. Yeah, you know, you're kind of on board with this triple barrel idea.
Yeah, I am. I think you've got actually a very good candidate for it. I mean, in theory, you're supposed to ever, right? You're supposed to never bet the flop, but whatever. We're in this room now, so I like it. Especially with your comment earlier about this table being fairly tending to fold. I really think his range is very weak here. It's a lot of these pair plus flush draw, pair plus straight draw, but pair plus both draws sort of hand. So I think those hands will all fold.
Well, you're absolutely right that that is his range. But what you are wrong is that he will fold those hands. As he villain snap calls with ace 5 offsuit with the 5 of diamonds.
Wow. Okay, well, we weren't really thinking about him having an ace, though, but...
No, I mean, I think even a weak ace might, like, you know, at least have to make a decision.
Yeah, but he snapped you off.
Snap.
You got owned.
I got owned.
I mean, it's interesting that he, I mean, you would think, like, well, maybe we're not going to get that much credit, but for having a flush here, just, you know, that we raised pre-flop, but... and all the high cards are diamonds, if he's really thinking at that level, but... the thing is, like, this is great because we just said you would do this with ace king,
so. Right, like, that's what I was gonna say is, yeah, I'm very happy to not get credit for, like, having a flush here, because I think I would be doing this with a lot of hands, because as you pointed out, I totally agree, his range is super capped. Like, this is like the best hand he shows up with.
Yeah, I agree. Ace-X is like, he would never have a stronger hand.
Yeah, and like, he even has a diamond, right? So, like, which is, you know, I mean, I don't know that the 5 of diamonds is that relevant, but
yeah, it's pretty bizarre. You think, like, he probably isn't really considering his draw that much.
No.
Like, if he makes a flush, it's probably... He's probably has to fold if he makes a flush, so...
Right.
Yeah, but it's interesting.
Yeah, so it is kind of a nice spot to realize, like, hey, you know, this is probably, like... You know, it's nice to be a little balanced in this spot because, like, you know, I'm bluffing here, I'm not... But I'm also just going, like, stupidly thin for value.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is why you can go so thin for value in live poker. It's like,
yeah,
people just call, like, so much.
Yeah, I mean, and this hand, I feel like, is often this kind of hand is often used as an example for why people say, like, don't bluff in live poker, right? But it's like, I don't really see that as being a good example of don't bluff in live poker. It's like, I'd like to bluff here because, like, he is going to, you know, most players are going to fold, like, a lot of their range in this spot.
I think he was actually at the top of his range. Like we say, you know, it's almost funny to say that because his hand was so weak. But, like, the way he played this.
Right, I would have heard from him before. He's never going to
have a better hand than Ace-X.
Right.
So, like, what's he going to show up with here? Like,
yeah,
like
King-Jack, maybe?
That would be insane.
King-Jack, no diamond, could play this way from a live player, right?
Yeah, unfortunately so for them. But yeah, I don't think that's unrealistic. But yeah, I think you did run into the top of his range, and it's a cooler.
It's a cooler.
Cool. Well, thanks everyone for listening along. As always, we really appreciate it. We hope you like the video and that you like the video.
And comment and subscribe. All these things that help contribute to our continual bankroll burning.
Exactly. We need these likes to get that. Your viewership is what keeps us going to the poker room and feeding the fish. So for the sake of the people in our local community, please continue to watch the videos.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Cool.
All right. Thank you, everyone.
Bye, everyone.